Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Now that the special election in Alabama is behind us, the nation's political attention is turning back to the next big move by the Trump administration. Federal Communications Chairman Ajit Pai has been leading a charge to peel back a law requiring internet service providers to treat the whole internet the same way. They can't speed up, slow down, or block any content on the web, or charge certain websites more for so-called fast lanes. Tomorrow, the FCC board will vote on net neutrality laws, and the expectation is that they will vote to remove the law requiring net neutrality. All three members of Vermont's congressional delegation are opposed to the repeal of net neutrality. Senator Patrick Leahy argues that repealing it will undermine the types of innovation that have taken place on the internet in recent years.
The internet was designed originally to be equal to everybody. That's how it's grown. That's how it's become as important in our lives as it is. If you had to pay different amounts for different access, it would not have grown this way.
Senator Bernie Sanders says the plan to do away with net neutrality is a case of the Trump administration, quote, siding with big money and against democracy. And Congressman Peter Welch is concerned that many rural parts of the country will suffer because some internet service providers could stop investing in projects to expand access in less populated areas.
This is going to further empower them to leave rural America behind and just focus on where they can make the most money. It's a very, very dangerous decision for the well-being of rural America, for Vermont and for our country.
Today on the program, we're going to talk about net neutrality, the vote tomorrow, and what it means. And we're going to look at whether or not this really spells the end of an open internet. Joining me today in VPR's Norwich studio is Dartmouth College engineering professor Jeff Parker. Professor Parker, nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jen.
And by phone, we are joined by UVM Sociology Professor Tom Streeter. Professor Streeter, nice to have you on the show today as well.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So let's talk first about why Ajit Pai thinks these open internet regulations should be repealed. Professor Parker.
So I think it's actually worth going back a little bit and thinking about the context in which these decisions are getting made and really why the telcos are advocating for this. If you look at where they've been over the last decade, even though they've had big revenues, that growth rate has been really low, maybe 1-2% per year, and the returns have essentially been negative. And then if you place that in the context of the major tech firms, think your Googles and Apples and Microsoft, those, of course, have become incredibly powerful and in many ways dominant firms in sort of our landscape. And so I think what they're trying to do, and again, I'm not going to play any advocacy here, but just trying to understand the motivations, is to try to figure out, well, how do we get out of this world of 1-2% revenue growth, which is just based on kind of selling more bit flow, and into a world where some of the value that gets created on top by all of these innovative companies like Netflix and you know, things like Prime Video coming out of Amazon and, of course, the major social and search firms. So that's a little bit of context. And so then the question you end up asking is, you know, are consumers going to get harmed? That's an open question.
Pause it there, because we're going to spend some time on that. And you know, I think that is a question for many consumers, because the bottom line for, you know, for so many of us is about our own lives. Like, what does this actually mean for me? But let's first talk a little bit about what's happening tomorrow. And Professor Streeter, you know, is this a done deal? Any chance the vote could go in some unexpected way tomorrow?
Well, it's Washington, D.C., so who knows?
So, yes.
Yeah, my understanding is that it's pretty much a done deal. The three Republicans on the FCC have made their point of view clear, and so I think we can expect it to pass tomorrow.
Yeah, you mentioned that the three Republicans are on the side of repealing net neutrality rules. The two Democrats are presumably on the other side. Does this fall evenly on political lines, or is this something that crosses depending on your perspective on open internet and where you fall on the technology spectrum?
There are Republicans across the country here and there who have been very strong advocates of net neutrality, and there have been Democrats who on occasion have done things that look like they're going on the other side. So it's not a strictly partisan issue. It salts out differently depending on who you're talking to. I think it's really more whether one looks mostly to established large businesses to decide what the policy should be, or if one expands the view to include small businesses and, as Bernie Sanders put it, the interests of democracy. I think it is right now a Republican-Democratic issue, but it doesn't always play out that way.
But Professor Streeter, when you talk about large, are we looking to large companies, large established companies, you know, sort of dictating or pushing for a policy or not? Even among large, and I guess what we would call established companies and organizations, there's a divide, right? Because the telecoms feel outmaneuvered by companies like Netflix and Amazon. And so there is this divide even among really big companies, depending on whether you're regulated as a telecom or not, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are different companies have different interests. Netflix would rather not to have to pay Comcast to get access to be able to sell you Netflix movies. And that's pretty straightforward. I do think the general issue and telecommunications policy is bigger than just the financial interests of the large companies directly involved. That if public policy is made properly, it of course can't ignore the large interests, but there's a lot more of us that will be impacted by this, and I think that matters too.
Well, Professor Parker, go a little bit deeper on that side of things and the argument against repealing net neutrality regulations.
So first of all, I think Professor Streeter made a great argument there about we don't know what's going to happen with the smaller firms. The large firms, the Netflixes and the Googles and the Apples, they can really take care of themselves. They have enough sort of bargaining power in this situation that they can push back.
Or pay a little bit more if they need to,
well,
or have that fast lane.
Exactly. And then the question, you know, is would prices rise a bit? Maybe, maybe not. So that's an open question, and that's an empirical question that we'll sort of know over time. But I think that the concern is and probably a legitimate concern is that we want to facilitate innovation in ways that we don't know what will happen. So the thousands and tens of thousands of little startups that could eventually sort of grow to potentially challenge some of these much larger firms in new markets. And so you don't want to put friction in place that might end up causing them to have a harder time sort of getting a hold or getting traction. And so that's, I think, the sort of counterfactual that we don't know what will happen, but it's a legitimate area of concern. And it gets more to that democratization of innovation, which is, I think, at the heart of sort of the drive for net neutrality.
So one thing that I think often gets confusing is that these rules were only codified in 2015. So, Tom Streeter, why is it such a big deal to repeal laws that are essentially only 2 years old?
I think it's partly the internet evolved in a kind of semi-regulated context. The internet was created originally invented with mostly government money from the military, from the National Science Foundation, and that kind of thing. And it's worth pointing out that if you go back to, say, 1990, the telecommunications companies were very suspicious of the internet and didn't want it to become the network of networks that it became. And part of why the internet succeeded in spite of opposition from the telecommunications companies, similar to those that want to eliminate net neutrality, is that it was designed on a very wide open basis. Anybody could connect. The protocols and so forth were available for free. So all you needed was the hardware to connect. And then when you connected, the software, the protocols obligated you to pass everyone's messages on equally. It didn't matter whether it was an email or an audio file or who it came from or where it came from. The way the internet works, everybody was obligated to pass everything around equally. It's sometimes called end-to-end design, where all the control over the network, over what goes in, is at the very end user point, and the pipes are completely neutral. So that technology took the world by storm in the 1990s and kind of revolutionized a number of major industries. And the question then has become, as more and more of us are more and more dependent on that technology, is how do we regulate it going forward? And the term net neutrality refers to what seems to most people be the original design of the internet, and it's an effort to preserve that. And so in 2015, after a basically 15-year struggle, when the FCC's net neutrality rules were implemented, the idea was it was preservative. It wasn't a brand new idea that nobody had thought of. It was, let's keep the internet as it has been, which is non-discriminatory in terms of any of its content. And so that's what happened in 2015 after, I mean, I think the term was coined about 2001 by a law professor called Tim Wu.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it took about 15 years to get it passed. But the idea was not let's create a new kind of thing going on the internet. It was let's preserve where the internet started and keep it as much as we can as it was in its original form. And so the effort to repeal is based on an argument that, well, we don't need that original form so much. We can afford to let people constrain it and create fast lanes and slow lanes.
Professor Parker, I wish you were in the studio with me here in Colchester because I can hear you furiously scribbling, and I want to know what you're thinking and what you're writing.
Oh, I'm taking notes. I mean, this is this is excellent background, and I think really useful for both myself, but hopefully for listeners as well. And I think, you know, every one of these telecommunications sort of revolutions, if you go back to telegraphy or if you go back to radio, there was always this notion that this time it's going to be sort of this technology of freedom. And then almost every time they've ended up getting constrained and regulated in many ways as both commercial interests came in and then you also had regulatory policy kind of grow up around. So it's interesting to kind of hear the story because this arc actually goes over centuries, not just decades. But if we kind of go to the question of innovation, I think, and consumer harm, one of the things you wonder is, well, will prices rise? And that's an open question we asked a couple of minutes ago. But if they do, the question is, will there be harm? Because one of the arguments from the telcos is that they might be able to do sort of innovative services in conjunction with some of these partners. So for example, when AT&T offers sort of no bandwidth limits on DirecTV or T-Mobile does the same thing with HBO, it's an open question as to where the harm is in that unless it becomes exclusionary and stops others from being able to innovate and enter those markets. And so,
well, I mean, I could point to that idea of rural access. You know, I live in a rural space. I have very limited options for who to get my internet service from. And, you know, my cell phone provider is not a reliable internet provider for me in my home. So if the one provider that I can go with decides to make changes, you know, essentially do the sort of we're going to promote this and not promote that, and it's not what I would want, you know, isn't the harm there in not in cost, but in choice?
Oh, I think there's a that's a different debate, and I think it's one that we really need to have, which is the fact that for high-speed internet access, really high-speed, we effectively have no choice. You can go to satellite, but it's not terribly high bandwidth, and it's quite expensive. So that I completely agree. I was sort of parsing your question a little bit more carefully to think about, well, how is it that these firms might actually be able to do some co-innovation with other partners that might create some benefit? But the broader point about lack of competition in just basic network access is dead on.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're looking at the concept of net neutrality one day before the FCC is expected to vote to end it. We're talking with two professors who've spent a lot of time looking at these issues. Tom Streeter is a professor of sociology at UVM. Jeff Parker is a professor of engineering at Dartmouth College. Randy says, it's a fix looking for a problem. Tell me who benefits from this. Only the largest service providers. And let's go to Ted, who's calling in from Williamstown. Hi, Ted. Go right ahead.
Hey, how's it going? Nice to talk to you guys. I'm just calling because, I mean, I think that personally this seems like an affront to, I guess, sort of like capitalism and what's going on. I mean, I think that we have been promised a lot by these telecom giants, and they're not really delivering. Paying to play for like the fast lane, I think, is something similar to the highway system. I think, you know, no one pays to go into the fast lane. It kind of just happens. And I think that if you are looking to make people do that, it's going to stifle innovation. And I also want to reference sort of a post, I think, that I saw on Reddit, and it talks about where these telecom giants have been given $400 billion worth of taxpayer money to basically bring the fiber optic networks up to a higher level. And basically, if you read the article, I don't have a link to it. I have a link to it, but obviously I can't share that on the air. And basically what the article says is that it just none of it's ever happened. And if you look at around the globe, sort of where America and the United States falls in terms of bandwidth and the amount of investment that I think we put into it, I don't really see, like, I mean, I guess it could be considered a pro point for repealing net neutrality, but I think the article that I'm talking about highlights the fact that these telecom giants have been given very large sums of money to bolster our infrastructure already.
So, Ted, I'm gonna take it from there. I hear your point, and thanks for the article idea. It's one vote in the keep net neutrality column there, mostly from Ted. Let's go to Luke, who's calling in from Richmond. Hi, Luke. What are your thoughts?
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. Hello, professors. I'm not a sociologist or an engineer. This will be short and pretty simple, but I think it's absurd to think that the little guy is not going to get gouged in the end if these rules are taken out.
And so you're a fan of keeping net neutrality?
Yes.
So how big a deal is that to you? I mean, are you really concerned? You know, you think the little guy's going to get gouged, but how much do you care?
I have Wi-Fi in my home. That's what I have in my home by choice, and it's $80 a month. I bet anybody a piece of cake it's going to be more than that shortly after this. And I believe the rules are going to be changed. I mean, we're outgunned right now, and there's a lot of stupid people in government who go go after the carrot that's being held out. So anyway, I told you it'd be simple, but I just don't agree with it.
Well, Luke, I appreciate your perspective. Thank you. One more in here from Barbara in Poultney, and then we'll come back to our professors, our guests. Barbara, what are you thinking about?
Well, I appreciate you taking my call. The first thing I wanted to say was on the FCC agenda, it's not called net neutrality. It's called restoring Internet freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So just in the way they're calling it, there's a bias. And I'm really curious about why, what's happened to the whole notion of a public trust, both in over the air and in Internet and everything else. The notion was that it would serve the public interest. I don't see any proposed change that's going to serve the public interest in particular.
Barbara, thanks for that thought. What do you think, Professor Streeter? I mean, here are three people who are saying this is a bad move, and Barbara saying, you know, what about this idea of serving the public and public trust and government's role in making sure that that happens?
I think, there is a kind of argument against net neutrality, and it's kind of buried inside the strange title of what they want to do tomorrow, restoring Internet freedom. There's a strange idea that government regulation is just bad, and the government cannot do anything right, and business always does everything right, or at least is somehow the market will fix things if businesses do things wrong. And, I think a lot of people, if they ever believed it, are not believing that so much anymore. You need collective action of various sorts just to make sure that whatever marketplaces emerge are fair, are free, are open, that they serve public goods, public ends. And I think one of the brilliant aspects of net neutrality is it's not actually an argument that the government should pick winners, that the government should be involved in choosing content, that the government should favor Corporation X because it does something that Corporation Y doesn't do that the government wants. It's not about government interference with any individual business. It's about creating, using government powers and government regulation to create a completely wide open, neutral, free playing field. And so a lot of it is how do you construct that? It is a use of government action. And it's any action in the world might help some businesses and hurt others. But it's part of what's nice about it is it just says, keep it open so everybody has equal access and equal choice on the Internet. And actions taken, such as, it's fine if Comcast wants to partner with HBO. The question is if they do it, is it going to slow down the Internet for other people and or make other things difficult? And I think a lot of small businesses are very concerned about that particular one. I mean, some small businesses now that are trying to do stuff on the Internet, they're finding that, a 4 to 8 second delay in response time can make the difference between people clicking on your site and doing something and engaging it and people moving on.
Mm.
So even slight slowdowns from a small business's point of view makes a difference. But I think but then there is the larger thing of what kind of society do we want to make for ourselves, and if the profits of the 10 largest companies involved in telecommunications for the next 5 years are the only thing on the table, well, you may go one way. But I think it is important, and I think most people actually care, that we also take into consideration what's going to be better for democracy, what's going to be better for the small players in the world, for the ordinary people. So.
Well, listeners, I'm curious if anybody out there can make that argument for repealing net neutrality. Do you see this as a better way of going about it? Do you see it as an issue of a government playing too big a role or having too heavy a hand in what's happening? Or can you see a claim that repealing net neutrality could actually be better for innovation, better for the Internet? You can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net, or you can call us 800-639-2211. Charlie emailed in to say there's a theory going around that when net neutrality is repealed, it will be a tool in silencing free speech. Is this a real concern? And if so, could you please explain? Professor Parker, what do you think?
So that's an interesting argument, and I think it is a concern, but more I don't see us entering a regime in which we literally silence voices, but little bits of friction. So you can imagine, for example, a social media firm could start up that might have alternate views, and then little impediments put in the way could end up preventing it from getting a large user base and growing to become sort of an important public voice. I do think it's worth stepping back a little bit because I think people are very worried about the prices, and there's sort of a contention that there hasn't been very much innovation. And I'm not – I'd like to challenge that notion in the sense that if you look at all of these incredible technology firms that have become – sort of part of the American and global economic landscape, they're all built on top of a pretty robust communications infrastructure. And none of that would have been possible without, you know, yes, we don't have that much choice, and yes, it costs more than it does in some other countries. But it is sort of the highway system or the electric power system that we're building these other firms on top of. And that's where I wish we could focus the debate back to, which is, are these firms to be regulated like common carriers the way we did the old telephone systems, or are they going to be sort of technology firms in their own right? And in the absence of choice, that's how you end up with getting common carrier. And so if we could sort of focus more of the policy debate on getting better choices so that you're not just having one provider, I think we'd be in a better place because, yeah.
Do you see that argument going anywhere, though? I mean, if tomorrow the FCC votes to repeal net neutrality, it doesn't seem like they're looking for solutions to that kind of question.
Point taken. I don't see the current set of governors looking at that. But I think as citizens, we would be in a better place if we really focus on that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We haven't talked much about these comments that the FCC received during its open comment period, and there were like 23 million, and there's been a little bit of a scandal and some questions raised about the fact that as many as 2 million of them are not legitimate or, you know, are in question. About 1 million were from bots. Others were from Russian email addresses. But it's also curious to me to think about whether it makes any difference what consumers are saying to the FCC about this and about what they want, and whether those comments really make any difference given what we're seeing, given the opinions of the people involved and what their stated opinions were even before the open comments period. So I'm going to come to you, Professor Streeter, but Professor Parker, what do you think? I mean, you want us to maybe rise up and say this is an important conversation to have, but from what you've seen about how the comments were treated, is the comments one of the ways to do that or not?
I don't think the FCC is going to be the path to that. I think that's a bigger and broader sort of congressional legislative issue. And I thought it was interesting. And Professor Streeter laid out that it doesn't always end up being a partisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember there was a senator from Wyoming, you know, maybe 15 years ago, who was a very strong proponent of an open internet and fighting against censorship. And so even in a fairly libertarian sort of environment. So I think that's a place for action. But your point, I mean, the comments were overwhelmingly against repeal and they appear to be getting ignored.
What do you think, Professor Streeter?
Well, I think there is a history where, you know, there was a time in the early 2000s when the very idea of net neutrality seemed getting anything through the FCC seemed like a pipe dream. And there were some activist groups that did organize email campaigns via the internet that were so powerful, it did surprise some people in Washington, and it did nudge things towards the the what eventually became the 2015 net neutrality rule. So that was a kind of long thing. Sometimes those things do make a difference over time as people express themselves, and sometimes it's people write legislators lean on people in the FCC and stuff. So it's and I think but since then, I think the people who are against FCC net neutrality regulation on the FCC, they kind of, I'm sure they knew they were going to get a lot of complaints over the internet, and so I think they were not thinking when they went into it, well, if people don't want it, we won't do it. That was definitely not the case. And I think, just to circle a little bit back, I think Jeff has a really good point that there are issues of how we get a robust, just plain internet access through in rural areas all over the country, so everybody has access to it, that's maybe actually kind of a longer-term issue. If somebody, by some miracle, flips tomorrow at the FCC and it doesn't get passed, that problem is not going to be then solved.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a longer and bigger-term issue. And it is true that other countries have cheaper and faster internet, often in contexts where there's a great deal more government intervention in these things. So that is a larger and important issue. But
yeah, and to that end, I mean, even if the vote tomorrow goes the way it's expected and net neutrality rules are repealed, couldn't the next administration come in and reverse this reversal and put back the net neutrality rules and then address that question of access? What do you think, Professor Streeter? I mean, it sort of feels like this could be a flip-flop that we just keep seeing.
I don't know. These days I've given up making crystal ball kind of statements because...
I guess more policy-wise, so we don't know what would happen.
Yeah, I think none of the companies are going to move real fast in doing the kind of restricted things people are afraid of when the rules are passed, precisely because they'd be afraid of political backlash.
Hmm.
And so I think there's something, an old term in Washington, regulation by raised eyebrow, where the fear of worse regulation will make companies kind of move cautiously. And so the kind of nightmare scenarios where the open internet gradually erodes and really we all find ourselves not with that open thing that we're used to now, that nightmare scenario is not going to happen overnight. It will be gradually introduced, and if there's pushback and, you know, another president or some changes on the FCC and so forth, I think it definitely could go the other way. But the longer a law stays in place, the more fixed it becomes.
So, Professor Parker, we just have a minute left, but bottom line, on Friday, when I wake up and turn on my phone and go to my internet, I'm not going to find anything different.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, and I think, you know, Tom makes a really good point of sort of the length of time that these firms will take to start to develop sort of new business relationships, roll out products and services, and also the fear that they'll have of overreach. Because if you do end up doing things that are clearly creating harm and you can document that, they'll get rolled back. I mean, you know, there is still a democratic process, and if people can point to specific harms and I believe that they'll get listened to. I think that still works.
Well, good. We'll have you back in, you know, 3 years when we see how that how that rolls out. Jeff Parker is a professor of engineering at Dartmouth College and co-author of Platform Revolution, How Networked Markets Are Transforming the Economy and How You Make Them Work for You. Professor Parker, thanks very much for being on the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Tom Streeter is a professor of sociology at UVM. It's been a pleasure talking with you as well, Professor Streeter.
Thanks very much.